Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I'm privileged to have a very, very accomplished individual, Pooja Taparia, with me. Pooja, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much.
Pooja is the founder and CEO of Arpan, which is working to eliminate child sex abuse in India. So Pooja, tell me, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
I think the first one is just setting up Arpan and, you know, having the motivation to address the issue of child sexual abuse. Mm-hmm. So way back in 2006, we started this, and I think this journey has been amazing. So I would say when I look back, that is one milestone I'm really, really happy about. The second is, you know, when Arpan got its first national level award, okay, the NTO India Award in 2011. Mm. And that was so motivating for all of us as a team then, because it meant that there was recognition, there was credibility, that we were doing good work.
Okay.
And the third milestone is that came in last year when, you know, over the last couple of years, we've helped build pedagogy for prevention of child sexual abuse with children by working in schools. In the last 2-3 years, we've worked with NCERT to integrate these as life skills in their curriculum. Mm-hmm. And I'm so proud to share that, you know, personal safety education, though in a very brief manner, is now a part of the Ayushman Bharat Yojana school health and well-being program, and has got rolled out across the country. And, you know, with a vision that wanting to take personal safety messages to all the children in the country. This has been a milestone that it started happening.
Fantastic. So, you know, let's talk of Arpan and the work you're doing. For all our viewers and listeners, tell me about the scope of work you handle.
Whoa. that's a great question. As an organization, we are over 100 member team and doing various different things. And as the CEO, I am literally having to look at all the aspects of the work that we're doing. So we have a vertical that works on all the prevention work. We have a vertical that does all the healing work, you know, providing counseling and therapy to child and adult survivors. Then we have, to scale our work, we're doing training and capacity building pan-India. And then we have a communications team, which is building movements like Child Safety Week, engaging people, and creating a lot of public awareness. We do a lot of research and monitoring and evaluation, making sure that the work that we do is effective and impactful, so that we can keep growing our work. And if we need to make any changes or change any strategy, then we look at that. And then, of course, continuously, you know, garnering resources to continue to the work, to continue to do the work that we do, both human, financial, all of those pieces. So, yes, a lot of all of these pieces.
Okay. So, you know, when I was reading about you preparing for my conversation with you, I was reading that there are over 32,000 cases every year. Tell me, how rampant is the problem of child abuse in our country?
32,000 is actually nothing. That is just a drop in the ocean. All NGO studies and the government study that happened in 2007 showed that every second child has experienced some form of sexual abuse. And, you know, we have 400 million, close to 400 million children in this country. So you can imagine the amount of abuse that is happening in our country.
And again, for all our viewers and listeners, help us to understand, how do you define sexual abuse?
So sexual abuse is any act, any sexual act by a powerful person which leads to sexual gratification is sexual abuse. And so to give you examples and just to clarify, for instance, obviously any contact like kissing, fondling, you know, penetration by any object or a part of a body, all of that would be contact abuse, contact sexual abuse. And non-contact sexual abuse would be any language that is inappropriate, showing pornography to a child, or making a child watch a person having sexual intercourse, all of those pieces would be non-contact sexual abuse.
Wow. So
any of these acts would be sexual abuse.
Incredible. And you say one out of two children have had this. Oh my goodness. That is very serious.
Yeah.
So tell me, you know, in a society which, you know, I would say pride itself with all our thousands of years of history, et cetera, what causes, you know, adults to take such extreme situations with children?
You know, in my opinion, I think, and this is not just India, but world over, I think we as adults have normalized violence. You know, we've grown up, you know, and in our childhood, if our parents have hit us, we think, you know, even we were hit by our parents once or twice or often, whatever. And so it's okay if we also hit our child. You know, we've grown up with maybe, you know, our parents saying that or neglecting us, being too busy or, you know, any kind of emotional abuse where, you know, you're good for nothing, you can't do anything. And even sexual abuse being inflicted by family members, relatives or neighbors or in the vicinity. And what happens with this is that, you know, we don't think that this is wrong. We don't think that, and it starts from the simple things of hitting children emotionally, you know, creating emotional abuse situations, neglecting them. And then, you know, you have sexual abuse as well. And I think that needs to change. That, you know, it's not okay to inflict any kind of abuse or neglect the child. And I think that awareness when comes in and when adults realize what kind of impact it leaves on children.
Correct.
I am sure people will stop this behavior.
Okay. Help me understand the process. Does someone call you and complain to you through a helpline? Or do you get to know from people? And then what steps do you take after that?
So we have calls coming in on our helpline, but primarily our work is in schools. And I'll very briefly tell you what do. We go into a school, we do training sessions with parents and teachers, telling them what is child sexual abuse, how can they better protect children, how can they teach children personal safety. It's followed by classroom sessions right from grade 1 to grade 10, 4 to 6 lesson plans of an hour each, where we teach children their rights, their responsibilities. We tell them touching rules and guidelines of what is not all right, safe and unsafe touches, who can they seek help from, how they can get away from an unsafe situation. And always remember, it's never their fault if something like this happens.
Correct.
This is then followed by individual sessions with every single child that we have worked with in the classroom, which makes our model very unique. World over, there are school-based prevention models, but nobody does individual sessions to give a platform for disclosure to children if they are experiencing abuse or if it has happened in the past. So during these individual sessions, a lot of children disclose experiences of abuse to us.
Okay.
When these cases get passed on to our counselors, they immediately meet the child. If there is any ongoing abuse happening, we work with the family to stop any ongoing abuse and also do psychoeducation with the family members so that we create a support system for the child and there's no future threat of re-victimization. Okay. And of course, counseling and therapy continues with the child till we see reduction in the shame, the guilt, the anger, the pain, all of that, and we think that the child's well-being is now enhanced, and which is when we close the case. And we then again do training sessions with parents and teachers, telling them what was the experience without sharing any cases with anybody. We maintain complete confidentiality. But this is how we get cases, and this is how we work in school programs. And very pleased to share, we've worked with over 120,000 children over the last 10 years. We've trained about 180,000 adults over the last 15 years.
Amazing. And how do you, at what age do you define a child up to?
18 years.
18.
And for the Indian law, it's 18.
Till you get an adult with 18, okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just mentioned that you go to school and you teach children from class, you know, from the youngest children to, say, class 10. The challenges would be very different for children of different ages, isn't it?
Yes,
absolutely. And the understanding will also be very different.
Absolutely, Absolutely. And it's very interesting to see that. I think younger children are much more open to listen. Their motivation to learn is very high. Their retention is amazing in comparison to the older children. With older children, we change the content a bit. We bring in internet safety. You can imagine with the whole world opening up to the internet, a lot of children today are on the internet, and teaching them about internet safety is very critical. And so talking to them about that and how can they be safe on the internet, talking to them about healthy and harmful relationships becomes very critical. So as age changes, we use age appropriate curriculum to talk about personal safety.
Okay. And again, when I was reading about what is going on, I was reading that a majority of these cases happen in at home.
That's true. A lot of it does happen at home. It happens in the neighborhood. What I would say is the majority happens by a known person.
Okay.
So it's either a family member, a relative, a neighbor, a teacher, or somebody in the community. But known people. Even in our work, we find that abuse by strangers is far lesser than known people.
Okay. And, when there is abuse from a family member or a known person, the other adults try and cover it up. What impact does this have on the child?
It's actually terrible. That is the reason why children don't disclose in the first place. Because I've always wondered, why is it that children don't talk about these things? One is that, we've never created a vocabulary for them to even talk to us that something like this is happening, right? It's very easy for a child to come and say, oh, this person hit me. But it's never easy for a child to come and say that, oh, this person touched me in my private parts. Simply because we've not given them a vocabulary. When we start teaching children names of body parts, we teach eyes, nose, mouth, chest. We skip the whole genital area and go straight to the legs. So at the age of 2.5, 3 years, the child is picking up this cue that I don't need to talk about those parts or that there is something shameful about it. So we've created a taboo at that very young age.
Wow.
So even when they grow up, they realize that, okay, this is not something I'm supposed to talk about. We've not given them a vocabulary. And the second thing is, children always feel that they'll get blamed for it.
Okay.
They'll be like, they feel that parents will say, oh, why did you go there? Why did you do this? You shouldn't have done this, or you should have gone there, or you should have gotten away. So they feel that, instead of getting support and help, we'll be blamed, we'll be scolded, we'll be beaten up. And so children don't talk about it. And I think as much as parents can create safe communication spaces with children, more the experiences of abuse will not happen and will be dealt with immediately. It's these communication channels that we need to create with children so that they feel the comfort that they will be believed, they will not be scolded, that they will get help.
Amazing. And so, let's talk about the new act that has been passed, which is the Prevention of Children from Sexual Offences, POCSO.
Right.
POCSO. What has been the impact of this legislation?
It's been brilliant.
It has been?
It's been brilliant. Simply because, earlier, the sections that were used in the IPC, Section 376 or 354, which are used for women when there is rape or molestation, those were sections that were being applied for children. However, the range of kind of sexual assault and abuse happening with children is different. I feel that what this legislation did was, it told the country and the people, children are important. We have a separate legislation to deal with these offenses. It is unacceptable for you to do it. And, we will take action if there is something like this. Of course, reporting needs to happen. But I think the messaging with having a separate legislation to deal with sexual offenses sent a strong message to society.
Very interesting.
And we have seen increased reporting over the last few years since POCSO has happened.
Amazing. Amazing. My next question, Pooja, is that, when something like this happens in a community, the community probably just closes ranks to protect the adult. When you and your colleagues go there to check this, is there any kind of a pushback or any safety issues?
Well, we usually only work with partners in the community. We ourselves don't go and work solitarily.
Okay.
And therefore, we always have the support of either a school partner or an NGO partner in the community. Hmm. And they you have a good equation with the people in the community, and hence they play a very key role in helping us deal with those cases and address those cases.
Okay.
Most cases get resolved and are handled amicably. Some cases are tricky and do become a little difficult to manage, but I think the message gets sent across. And, so far, it's been okay, I would say.
Okay. And, you know, when a little while ago, you had mentioned that when you were talking about your teams, that there is a team that handles the children who are undergoing such trauma.
Yes, that's right.
What is the kind of support you give to such children?
So, primarily counseling and therapy. It is about creating a safe space for them where they can talk about their experience. Mm. They can share their feelings without any hesitation.
Mm.
Tell us what happened exactly. And then have a person who can just listen to them, believe them.
Mm.
And the healing process just starts with the way we respond to a disclosure.
Mm.
And otherwise, it just creates further trauma for the child. If I were to respond, oh, what happened? How did you do this? Why did you go there? The child's going to just feel even more traumatized.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the counseling space begins with creating a safe space for the child.
Mm-hmm.
And then we use different therapies, arts-based therapy, EMDR, TFCBT. These are all counseling techniques that we use to help the child heal.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe that at a younger age, it becomes easier to heal than an adult because, you know, the imprints have happened for a long time. It's had a huge impact.
Mm.
But, you know, you will be surprised to know, but there are adults in their 50s and 60s coming in for counseling.
Really?
They can see the long life impact that the abuse has happened, and they want to come and deal with it and address it because they can see how it's affecting their lives on a daily basis.
Wow.
But if you are able to heal children at that young age, the impact will not stay on throughout their lives. And therefore, therapy is very important. And this pandemic has gotten the conversations on mental health going in a very big way, which is very, very good, because we all think that, oh, counseling is only required when you have a mental health problem or you are mad or you have an issue.
Correct.
But actually, counseling is as normal as going to a doctor to treat cold. So if we are wanting to treat our bodies so quickly, why not our mental well-being and enhance that?
I agree. And you also mentioned that there's a very large number of unreported cases.
That's right.
What happens to such cases? I mean, you know, no, there's no counseling. There is no one to talk to. They must be affecting large number, members of society.
Absolutely. And unfortunately, those children suffer in silence because they don't know who to report to. They don't know where to go.
Mm.
And therefore, yes, there is a large number of unreported cases. Mm.
And do such people come back to you later on in life also saying, we didn't have the courage to talk then, but now we need counseling?
Yes. So when we go back and do our program, so we have a step up program. We go back to those children in 2 to 3 years in the same school and give age-appropriate curriculum again. Because let's say we use the grade 3 curriculum at that point.
Mm.
When we go back, we will use the grade 6 curriculum because we're giving additional skills. And very often we see that in our step-up program, those children who had not revealed to us earlier, they share it now because that trust has got built. And children don't share unless the trust is there.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. Well said. So I've got time for 3 or 4 questions for you personally now.
Yes.
My first question, Pooja, is that, you know, you're doing such amazing work. You're, you know, giving back so much to society. What does success mean to Pooja?
For me, the barometer is that if I feel proud about having done my best, then that to me is success.
Hmm.
Because I believe that whatever I do, I should give it my best shot, no matter what the outcome.
Okay.
And I feel satisfied with having done my best, and that to me is success.
Fantastic. And as you look back and as you look, you know, ahead, and you're doing so much amazing work, who or what inspires you to keep pushing yourself?
I've had a lot of people who've helped mentor me, advise me, you know, world leaders that, you know, I've read about, have been inspiring. What makes me go on today is, I would say, children themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Our work with children is so beautiful. The kind of feedback we get from children, the resilience we see in children is just amazing. And they motivate us on a, motivate us on a daily basis, I would say.
Incredible. So two more questions for you.
Yes.
My next question is that if you, Pooja, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
I tend to work very hard.
Okay.
And while I have inculcated a lot of self-care practices into my schedule to take care of my physical and emotional well-being, it's not enough for the kind of work that I do. And I feel that I must invest more time in taking care of myself so that I'm able to give the best to my world. And I look at that as my responsibility.
Correct.
Because when we don't give the best of ourselves to what we do, it's not necessarily the best outcome that you get. So investing in ourselves is as important as investing in the work that we do.
Very well said. And my last question for you, Pooja, is on failure. You know, I have a new book coming on failure. And I've often said that parents in India, I'm a parent too, we don't teach children it's okay to fail.
Yeah.
You know, it's exactly the same example that you gave, that when body parts are talked about, some parts are not spoken about. And because we are always told come first, and we, you know, this manifests itself in our behavior patterns in life, yet we keep failing. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes?
For me, the biggest learning has been that it's very critical to plan. Plan well. One must have the foresight of what can go wrong, what can go right, and if this goes wrong, what are we going to do? And so think of risks, have the foresight to think of risks, and have a plan to how you will mitigate those risks. Because, you know, especially the work that we do is very sensitive, very complex. And the impact it has is so huge that the accountability and the responsibility that we have on our shoulders is huge. We cannot afford to go wrong.
Correct.
In the decisions we take.
Correct.
And therefore, it's very important to think through things thoroughly. Make sure we know what we will do when things go wrong, and go accordingly. So I would say planning well is very important in life.
Very nice. Pooja, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for the incredible work you're doing for children.
Thank you so much. I'm very glad to have, you know, had this conversation with you, and thank you for inviting me.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.